The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McKeonis. I was saddened to hear that Herbert Woodward Martin died on Monday, July 20th. He was 92. Over the years, Herb made a half dozen appearances on the program, and he's one of my favorite guests. He brought such a joy to poetry. He was so amazing. When you heard him recite Paul Laurence Dunbar, there was so much passion and joy. He wasn't just reciting, he was performing. This is from his obit that ran in the Dayton Daily News. University of Dayton English professor emeritus and author Herbert Woodward Martin, a top scholar of Dayton poet Paul Laurence Dunbar, died Monday, July 20th. He was 92. Martin was born October 4th, 1933 in Birmingham, Alabama. At age 12, he and his family moved to Toledo. After spending time in New York City, where he first started to publicly perform his own poetry, he earned a Bachelor of Arts in English from the University of Toledo in 1964. Martin went on to earn a Master of Arts from SUNY Buffalo, a Master of Letters from the Breadloaf School of English at Middlebury College, and a Doctor of Arts in Poetry and Creative Writing from Carnegie Mellon University. In an academic career lasting until 1979. Now, I think that that is a mistake. I think the editor should have caught that one. I believe his academic career lasted a lot longer than 1979. In fact, Herb was associated with the University of Dayton for over half a century. And he was, I believe, at the University of Dayton in the early 70s. I believe that's when he joined the faculty. So he definitely had an academic career that went beyond 1979 editor out there. You missed that one. Anyway, I love editors. We're going to bring you the best of the book now. And Herb Martin, I went back and I pulled out three interviews that I did with him. He wrote his own poetry and he interpreted others. And we're going to look back at an interview we did in 2020 for his book, The Shape of Regret. And then in our second segment, we'll go to the next year, 2021, and listen to an excerpt from my interview for his book, Sometimes Say My Name. And then we'll go back for the final segment to 2014, when he put out a book called On the Flyleaf. And the thing I really loved about Herb was, during these interviews, I would often ask him, well, who are you, Herb? Where'd you come from? Tell us your story. And he would repeat some of the same information, but he would also always add new information. And so we're going to hear a couple of examples of that coming up on the Best of the Book Nook as we remember Herb Martin.
Most of the poets that I knew when I was growing up were kind people, and they took me under their wings and said, try this thing and try that thing and don't do this, try this. And if it works, then it's yours. And so they were, I think, people who were interested in the craft, and they got me going and they kept me going. And so that's why a number of those poems, I look back, and for some reason, their poems influenced me. And I've been the better for it, I think.
Some of the poems definitely read like tributes, at least stylistically.
Sure, sure.
Right?
Yes, yes. I think right now of, say, William Carlos Williams, that we had a small kind of correspondence with, and he was really very gracious about it all. My habit was to go, if I was in a town where I knew some famous poet lived, I would go and knock on his door. And most of the time, they were very kind, and they invited me in. You know, here was this kid who knocked on their door not invited, and they took me in and gave me cookies and coffee and whatever. But they also gave me advice about how to do it, and so I've tried to pass that on to my own students.
Who were some of the poets that you visited in that fashion?
Well, the one that I missed was W.H. Auden, who was living in New York City, decided to go back to England, and for some reason I had a summer off and I went to England. I missed him by a few days, and then finally I ended up in Austria, and somebody said, he lives here, and why don't you try and go to his house? And I thought, I debated it, and then he passed away.
Oh my!
And is buried now in Austria in Kirchstetten. And so I finally got on a train and went with my friend to Kirchstetten, and the housekeeper welcomed me into the house and offered me drinks and food, and then let me sit at Auden's typewriter, which was always the way I did things. And one other time I was in Breadloaf, and that was where Frost operated. He had a little cabin way out in the woods, and his chair that he had taken with him to London was there. And my teacher said, go ahead and sit in the chair or you'll hate yourself if you don't sit in his chair. And I sat in his chair, and then I put the plywood over, which he used as a desk, in that chair. And so it was one of those kinds of things. Just by happenstance, I was in one place, and somebody would let me have free roam in the house. And so I took advantage of it. You know.
You're saying you went to Robert Frost's cabin,
yes,
but he wasn't there.
No,
he was a pilgrimage.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
but I did see him. He did come that summer I was in Breadloaf.
All right.
I thought everybody should stand. I kept thinking that to myself, and finally somebody said, he's here, and the old man walked into the room. You know, just like one body stood up, the whole room just stood up and applauded.
Mm-hmm.
And he said something that really sort of amazed me and was kind of prophetic. He said, and John Kennedy will be the next president. And we were thinking, oh, no, he can't do that because Nixon been around. And Nixon had more media attention than John Kennedy did, but he was elected. And I thought, my goodness, how did he know that? And it's sort of one of those things that poets will tell you will happen, and you think, maybe it will, and then it happens.
Uh-huh.
And you're confounded by it, and you don't know why that that person knew that thing, that piece of information that he shared with you. But you're struck by the wonder of it, and that it might very well have been prophetic, because you just don't know.
You're dating that prediction. It must have been in 1960 that you were at Breadloaf for that.
That's right.
And of course, Kennedy went on to honor Frost.
Yes, and he became the poet who read at the inauguration.
Mm-hmm. In case you're just tuning in, my guest is Herbert Woodward Martin, and he's got a new collection of poetry out called The Shape of Regret. We've had you on the program a number of times, Herb, but I'm sure we have listeners out there who didn't hear all those interviews, and they're probably, some of them, wondering, who is this guy? How did he become a poet? Where did he come from? What has he done?
Yeah.
Where has he been?
Yeah.
Can you tell us some of this?
Well, I think I can try and back up in a few sentences. When I was very, very young, we lived in Birmingham, Alabama. And in those days, Dunbar was in the textbook because the schools were separate, and certainly not equal, but they were separate. And so Dunbar and I had horn-rimmed glasses. My friends thought that I looked like this man, And so they said, go home and ask him if he won't speak to the teacher and tell her not to make us memorize any more poems. I don't know this man. No, you look like him. And in those days, black people as well as white people thought all black people look alike. So you must know him. Well, I didn't, and I had to block that. But I liked those poems. And afterwards, we moved from Alabama to Ohio, and Dunbar disappeared. And I did not see him until I went to college again. So at that point, I got interested again in Dunbar, just a little bit. And then I heard Margaret Walker read Dunbar. And Alan Tate in those days had told me a year before that, he said, you need an old guy in your repertoire. And I thought, well, I don't know what he means by old guy. When I heard Walker read Dunbar, I thought, ah, that's my old guy. And so I went back and learned all the dialect again that I had learned when I was a kid in the South, which was fairly easy. All I had to do is go back to, say, a black church or listen to people talking on the bus. And they did have a difference in the way in which they spoke. And it was fairly easy for me to recollect all of that information and put it in my head and body again. So I became one of those people who would read Dunbar to his students. And they would go out and I'd say, this is how you do it. And they would call me up and say, no, will you come to my school and read Dunbar to the students there? And I said, but I taught you how to do this. And they said, yeah, but nobody can do it as well as you can. So I would go to their schools. And that's sort of how I became a promoter for Dunbar in this area. But
probably our foremost authority on Dunbar, in my opinion, yeah. And Dunbar, of course, from Dayton, and sure. I think it's fun that you refer to him as your old guy, since he had such a short life,
yes.
And he died so young, yet he was so prolific.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
And you have brought a lot of relatively unknown Dunbar material back to the public eye, haven't
sure.
you?
Sure, yeah. I found that he had written some plays, all of which were in standard English. And I think in one way he was trying to say, I can do more than write just dialect poems. I can do standard English. And so he goes back to, say, the 17th and 18th century and writes in standard English, but not only in standard English, but English English rather than American English. Which must have been a trial for him, but it worked, and I discovered Herrick, and that was one of four plays. The Library of Congress told me that the other three, they didn't have room for them, and so they threw them out onto the dustbin, and so I think those three are lost, but Herrick was found. It took me almost a decade before I found a publisher who was willing to publish it, and so it is out there, and people have read those poems and that play and have contributed to the body of American literature.
Tell us a little bit more about Dunbar. We have some listeners out there who probably aren't familiar with him. Who was he?
Well, he was a young black man born in 1872, and he dies in 1906, so he lives 33 years. Then if you count, say, from 18 on, he only has about a decade and a half to write. And in those years, he wrote 12 books of poetry, 4 novels, 4 books of short stories, and a lot of other materials that have not been published yet. But he, you know, he say a decade and a half, he must have been working night and day to produce those. And he did manage to do that. And 2 of the novels are still in print. I think all 4 of them are in print, but 2 of them are get taught more often than not. So.
And his grave is at Woodland Cemetery.
That's right. And he is buried in the same plot area with the Wright brothers. They were friends. They mm-hmm. went to school together, and only one of the brothers graduated with Dunbar. And then they had a newspaper together, which they published for about a year, maybe a year and a half. But I like to think that they parted company. They remained friends, but they went about their business in different areas. But I think I like to say that Dunbar wanted to see how he could fly with words, and the Wright brothers wanted to see how they could fly with machinery. And they both achieved their goals.
That was Herb Martin, recorded back in 2020, talking about his poetry collection, The Shape of Regret. Herb died on Monday, July 20th. He was 92 years old, and I believe he was our leading interpreter of the poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar. We're going to bring you another excerpt from another interview coming up right after this.
The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, and Tipp City Public Library.
The Best of the Book Nook continues on WYSO, remembering Herbert Woodward Martin, who died on July 20th. He made a half dozen appearances in the Book Nook, and back in 2021, he had a book out called Sometimes Say My Name. And this was unusual for Herb. These were prose poems. And he was remembering and meditating upon the AIDS epidemic. And the title came from something that he heard said by a fellow named Willie Short, who died at the age of 36 from AIDS. Let's listen now to Paul Laurence Dunbar. No, actually, I always mistook him for Paul Laurence Dunbar. Herb Martin, who, even when he was a kid, was mistaken for Paul Laurence Dunbar because they kind of looked similar. Let's listen. Willie Short, your 36-year-old dishwasher in Houston, Texas, who discovered he was dying of AIDS, how did you channel him? Your poetry is coming out of him. It's coming out of your imagination of what he thought, of yes. what he might have said, of what he might have felt.
Yeah.
How did you do that? How did you get into that state?
Well, I think for two reasons. One is that many black men look to their mothers as a source of inspiration and guidance. And so I thought I perhaps had better take that route. And so I decided to have him talk to his mother or ask for advice. And from time to time, she offers advice in the poems themselves. Mm. So that's sort of how it came about. But I thought that might make a tighter relationship if the speaker, the narrator, the persona of the poems had a relationship with his mother. And so that's how that came about. And I thought that the essential metaphor might be their house or their home, the one that they live in. And so all of that comes to play in the poem in particular ways.
Mm.
And it sort of guided me and kept me at least slightly related to the poem as they progressed. So that's how I chose it, so that the essential metaphor is the house. But the speakers in the poem are William Short and his mother. And now that I think about it, she's never named.
Right.
Except his mother. And I don't know if I were pressed, I would find it very difficult to give her a given name or a married name.
Mm-hmm. Herb, I'm sure we have listeners out there who are saying, okay, ask him to read something from the book so we know what this sounds like, so we know what it feels like. Have you got something that you'd like to read for us?
Well, as I wrote the poem, the events of the day sometime interrupted. And this one happened with the women of Poland who decided that they'd had enough of people taking over their country and telling them what to do. So it's, if I recall, it's number 14, and it's dedicated to Poland. During a small, minimal sense of time in the agony of my life, I saw old women kneel down, believing that such an act would bring salvation to their country. They kissed the earth that surrounded the houses that they lived in. That was a gentle and tender time. They would not love the land less because some general had made a decree they could not abide nor live with. It was the old women who called the citizens to arms, saying, "We have prayed long enough for the gentle necessities to house the precious water that will redeem us. The land needs it. We must return with the gentleness of our bodies and declare a new state." And so I thought, you know, here is women in a particular country taking over and saying, we have to be better than this and to move forward. And it was one of the events during the, shall we say, the pandemic of AIDS that interrupted everything, and we turned our attention to the conflict that was taking place in Poland.
Did the coronavirus pandemic occur as you were working on this book, or what was the symmetry there?
Strangely enough, I think the book in poetry form was already finished by 2020 or 2019, and then they wrote and asked if I had some poems that I would submit, and being as wise as I was, I submitted all haikus, which fell dead at their doorstep. And then they said, "Did I have anything else?" And I said, "Yes, I have these poems on aid, but why don't I send them to you as I revise them?" And I revised them and turned them all into prose poems. And they liked that idea. The poem comes about in 2019-2020 as a prose poem, and that's the new form that I went with. And I don't know why I suddenly decided that prose might be better than poetry, but I did do that. And it's one of the mysteries that still hangs around in my mind.
My guest is Herbert Woodward Martin, and we're talking about his book, Sometimes Say My Name. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, amplifying voices from every corner of our community. Herb, I remember 40 years ago when we first started hearing about AIDS.
Yeah.
And then we saw the impact that it had and all the lives that were lost. And so many people in the artistic world seem to have been hit with it. And I'm wondering what your memories are of it and what your reflections are on it and what you think about the situation today, because we really don't hear that much about it anymore.
No, it's sort of gone by the wayside, and I'm sure that there are enough medication that people can live a long time by taking their pills and following a particular regimen. But, you know, I tend to think, because I was in that body of poets and writers and things like that, lots of people were just dying, and you didn't know mysteriously how they were dying, because it was something that we did not talk about and we did not publicize it, and the powers that be ignored it, hoping that it would simply go away. And it didn't until we finally came to our senses and thought, this is something that we've got to pay attention to. So I remember many, many people that I sort of mourned because I thought that their lives had been cut short or their talents had been dismembered in some kind of way, and that we would not benefit from that any longer. So all of that really troubled me in some ways. And so I'm sure I mourned for a very, very long time at the loss of all those people in the world, not just in our country.
Herb, over the last 20 years, I've had you on the show a number of times, but I'm sure we have listeners out there who didn't hear any of those interviews, and they don't have any idea who you are. Who are you, Herb?
Well, somebody told me last night that I was pretty hard to introduce and capture on paper, and I thought, that's strange. I don't think of myself as hard to know, but I suppose that somebody is outside my body and has a right to that opinion. I don't know who I am, to tell you the truth, but I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, from 1933 to 1948, I think. And my father got a letter from his sister saying, come north, you can make $5 a day instead of $5 a week. Mm. And so he left Birmingham. My mother followed him a month later, and I followed him, the two of them, at Christmas time, and we came to Toledo, Ohio. And so Ohio became the next real juncture in my life, and that's where I went to high school and graduated, and that's where I went to the University of Toledo and graduated, and the rest, I think, is history for the most part. I landed by accident in Dayton, Ohio, and took a job at the University of Dayton, and then suddenly realized that Dunbar was buried in the cemetery next to the university, and I had not paid very much attention to him in the north, but had known of his reputation while I was in Birmingham, Alabama. But as I say, when we came north, all the black writers disappeared from the textbooks because we had two groups of people writing the textbooks. I went to a segregated school, so the black writers furnished the books and edited the books that went to the black schools. But when we came north, it was perhaps a more liberal white, and the black writers sort of all but disappeared except for somebody like Langston Hughes. So that pretty much is my life, I guess, in a nutshell.
Okay, Herb, you mentioned Dunbar. You just said Dunbar because you assume everyone out there knows that Martin and Dunbar are inextricably linked. That was Herb Martin, recorded in 2021, talking about his prose poetry in a collection called Sometimes Say My Name. You heard it on 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. And if you've been waiting for Herb's recitations of the poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar, of course, he's inextricably linked, the two of them, as a leading interpreter of Dunbar's poetry. Well, you're going to be rewarded. In this final segment, we're going to hear Herb Martin, who died just the other day, reciting some Paul Laurence Dunbar. That's coming up right after this.
The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Dayton Metro Library and Washington Centerville Public Library.
We are remembering Herb Martin on the Book Nook today, and he was on the show a half dozen times during his life. And we're going to revisit an interview next from 2014, when he came out to Yellow Springs one day, and we were recording an interview for his book On the Flyleaf, a collection of his work. And we never got to the Dunbar poetry. So I said, Herb, let's record two shows. And so we did a second show, and he did some Dunbar. And we're going to bring you an excerpt from that interview now as we close out the best of the Book Nook in our remembrance of Herb Martin on WYSO. My guest is Herb Martin. We've had you on the program before, and you read some Dunbar for us. And this is quite a memorable experience, and we'd love to hear you read some more.
Well, I'd like to read what I think is perhaps a prophetic poem. And this poem is, we have to remember that Dunbar's dead by 1906. And this poem anticipates a leader who is not born until the late 1920s. And the poem reads as follows. He had his dream. He had his dream, and all through life worked up to it through toil and strife, afloat forever before his eyes. It colored for him all his skies, the storm cloud dark above his bark, the calm and listless vault of blue took on its hopeful hue. It tinctured every passing beam. He had his dream. He labored hard and failed at last, his sails too weak to bear the blast. The raging tempest tore away and sent his beating bark astray. But what cared he for wind or sea? He said, the tempest will be short. My bark will come to port. He saw through every cloud a gleam. He had his dream.
Wow, so it was a prophetic poem about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
It's interesting because Dunbar is dead before he's even born, you know, and I'm thinking maybe in some ways this falls upon the shoulders of poets to be prophetic and to anticipate in some ways the future. And this poem strikes me by Dunbar that it does exactly that.
Herb Martin is our guest. So when Mr. Tate told you need to find an old guy, what exactly did he mean by that?
I think he meant that I had to have somebody in my arsenal that I sort of promoted and to keep that person before the public's eye, and that sometimes there are really some very genuinely good poets out there that don't get any attention at all, and so they sort of disappear or they fall by the wayside. And I think he was suggesting that I pay attention to a number of the old guys who had passed this way and were not gaining any notoriety or any attention at all. You know, I can think of Melvin Tolson, for one, who was very, very brilliant and was a mayor of the city out west, but very few people know him and understand his poetry. It's very difficult. It has 50 allusions maybe to one line, so you have to be aware of a whole lot of things. But that's one person.
Melvin Tolson.
Yeah, M.B. Tolson is his name. Mm. And he somewhere comes just after Langston Hughes and in between Gwendolyn Brooks and Robert Hayden, a brilliant poet.
I remember several years ago, I believe it was Ohio University Press published a biography of Dunbar, and you were involved with that.
Yes, yes.
I read that, and there was a lot of new information about Dunbar in there, wasn't there?
Sure, yeah. I found maybe 49 new poems and was trying to get somebody to publish that, as well as the play that I had discovered had never been published before. He left it in manuscript. And that's how I found it, after looking and looking and looking and thinking, there's no such thing. He never wrote this play, and then suddenly there it was.
How did you feel when you found it?
I was just sort of, I guess I was really ecstatic and happy and joyful, and at the same time wondering why nobody had ever paid attention to this before. But I noticed in Negro Digest, first of all, that somebody had suggested that he had written some plays. But I thought, well, no one has ever said anything more about them. Where are they? And I finally located a lady in the Library of Congress who must have entered the building when it was first finished. And she said to me that she would call me back and tell me exactly where it was. And I thought, yeah, she's going to do that. But she did. And she told me that I could find it on some tapes, in some papers that had been preserved and had been microfilmed. And indeed, there it was. So when I saw the title, Herrick, I sort of held my breath. And then I scrolled through the whole thing. I didn't breathe until I came to Act 3 and the end. And then I thought, it's all here. And I was absolutely elated and surprised that it was there.
I also seem to recall that we got a look at his novels as well in this particular study.
Yes.
And I can see why the poems were what he's known for.
Yes.
The novels, some of it was kind of tough reading.
Some of it was, yeah. Because the first three are actually, I think, somebody, if I may say this, in white skin that's colored black. But the fourth one is absolutely right on target. It has genuine black characters who use dialect, who are smart people, who are very clever people, but who are caught in the midst of circumstance. The other interesting fact about this is that Dunbar was ill, and he wrote this novel in about 1 month, about 30 days. And it is the best of the four, though the other three are not bad. As he gets closer and closer to number four, mm-hmm. The sequence of telling and the plot of everything that he puts down is really quite remarkable and first rate. So
that was his mature work.
Because yes, yes.
He wasn't with us much longer.
No, not much longer. But he did over, I think, probably 400 short stories as well.
Wow.
You know, so he was really, I think he must have been pushing the pen across the paper night and day.
Herbert Woodward Martin joins us. We're talking about Paul Laurence Dunbar, probably one of the best known poets to ever come out of Dayton, Ohio. Or would you say he is the best known?
Probably, certainly out of Dayton, the best known, and the one that is often more than not anthologized.
Yeah, we'd love to hear another one.
Well, here is one called A Negro Love Song. And if you happen not to be of that ethnic persuasion, you can always change it and put in the right ethnic persuasion, because it fits the poem. A Negro Love Song. I seen my lady home last night. Jump back, honey, jump back. I held her hand and I squeezed it tight. Jump back, honey, jump back. I heard a sigh, a little sigh. I seen a light gleam from her eye and a smile go flitting by. Jump back, honey, jump back. I heard the wind blow through the pines. Jump back, honey, jump back. The mockingbird was a-singing fine. Jump back,
back, honey, jump back. And my heart was beating so when I reached my lady's door that I couldn't bear to go. Oh, jump back, honey, jump back. I put my arm around her waist. Oh, jump back, honey, jump back. I raised her lips and took a taste. Jump back, honey, jump back. I love me, honey, love me true. Love me well as I love you. And she answered, 'cause I do. Jump back, honey, jump back.
Herb Martin reading Paul Laurence Dunbar. I've heard you read that poem a number of times. And how many times do you think you've read that particular poem?
I can't imagine now how many times. But it has a nice kind of rhythm. Mm-hmm. And it almost reminds you when the refrains of a little bit of rap. And that Dunbar is anticipating these people, and how fast can you read this, and how fast can you say it? So he really had a sense about what he was seeing and what he was hearing.
Mm.
Yeah.
And you also have a new collection of your own poetry out called On the Flyleaf, and we had you on the program last week to talk about that and to read some poetry from it. And you were kind enough to return for an encore this week, because last week we didn't get to Dunbar, and
nope.
And there's so much there.
Well, yes, there is a great deal there, and I'm working with another person right now to reissue as many more of the 50 poems that I found, the 50 poems that Joanne Braxton has found. And in recent months, I think the new editor that I'm working with has come up with almost 20 more poems. So we are finding pieces that are out there just languishing, waiting for us to put together with something like a definitive volume of Dunbar's collected poems.
Now, where do you find a lost poem? Is it in a letter? Is it in an old newspaper? Where do you find them?
Sometimes you find them in newspapers. Like I found three in the Denver Post, I think. Yeah, that's right, Denver Post. And they were published just around the end of Dunbar's life when he went to Colorado to get better from tuberculosis. Mm. He published them, and they just stayed in the newspaper, and no one has sought them out. So my new collaborative colleague has gone through every biography and noticed all the poems which have been mentioned, and then has put in that title into the search engine, and sometimes it comes up with the poem, and it comes up with where it is in what particular journal. So Dunbar was sending things out very much like I did.
Uh-huh.
And getting them into interesting journals. One of the other curious things that I don't think happened to anybody else but did to Dunbar is that if a editor liked a particular poem and liked only, say, maybe two verses out of a four-verse poem, he would take those two verses and then put a new title on it and publish it with Dunbar's name. So I found in a number of places that that happened to Dunbar, but I don't think it happened to anybody else. They just took great liberties when they wanted to.
And he might not have even known about it.
No, he may not have known about it, but I found a number of poems where I've had to put back two stanzas with two other stanzas and corrected it.
So it's almost a form of poetic archaeology.
Yeah. You have to look and keep looking and search. If somebody in a newspaper article mentioned that he had just written a poem, that poem may not have gotten into his collected edition, which came out in 1913, and so has languished somewhere in somebody's archives.
Well, I, of course, recall going to the library and going through the microfilm of all the old newspapers. Has this stuff been digitized?
Some of it has been, but a lot of it hasn't. It's just a matter of who is working on what right then and there in a particular journal or in a particular group of newspapers. Mm. But you still have to somehow let the fingers do the walking, and you have to go through a number of volumes in the library. You just have to put your hand on these things and search for them, and sometimes it will yield pure gold.
Herb Martin joins us. We're talking about Paul Laurence Dunbar, and you've been kind enough to read some of his poetry. You're very much associated with Dunbar, I think, in the minds of many, as you yes. stated. You're in the grocery store. And do they really think you're Dunbar?
Yes, I think I still look a little bit like him, though he never got to be my age. So, but that resemblance is there. And sometimes when I'm reading, say, in a grade school or a high school, the kids think that I really am him in some kind of way. Uh-huh. And it's something that I can't erase. And so I've just given up on it, and I just go with the flow now.
So you don't believe in reincarnation then? I'm just kidding. We'd love to hear another poem.
Well, let me read you Dunbar's most famous poem. It's the one that gets anthologized the most, and it is in standard English as well. We wear the mask. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. Why should the world be overwise in counting all our tears and sighs? Nay, let them only see us while we wear the mask. We smile, but O great Christ, our cries to thee from tortured souls arise. We sing, but oh, the clay is vile beneath our feet and long the mile. But let the world dream otherwise. We wear the mask.
And that was Herb Martin, Herbert Woodward Martin, recorded 12 years ago when he came out to Yellow Springs to talk about his book On the Flyleaf. And I got him to do some Paul Laurence Dunbar, and he had recited some of those poems hundreds of times, maybe thousands of times, and he never lost the joy or the passion that he brought to those poems. He had every single word exactly the way he wanted it. The diction, the cadence, the way he raised his voice or lowered it, just beautiful. And being in the studio with him when he recited those poems was really an incredible experience. And I've heard a lot of people who were experts on poetry, like Herb was, who didn't bring that kind of life to poems. They didn't feel it like Herb did. And he really felt it. And he will be missed. He died at the age of 92. Herbert Woodward Martin. Over a half century, association with the University of Dayton, professor of emeritus, and just a visionary who loved poetry. He lived and breathed it. He was constantly submitting poetry for publication to various journals and publishers, and I'm sure he never stopped. I'm sure he kept it up right to the end. Coming up tomorrow, a very interesting revisitation in the Book Nook, the best of the Book Nook, at 10:30 tomorrow morning, when I'll be bringing an interview I did 26 years ago with a guy named Albert Taylor. Back in 1994, he self-published a book, and he had been working as a scientist for the government, had a really good job, but he got so into the subject of astral projection that he self-published this book called Soul Traveler, A Guide to Out-of-Body Experiences. And it ended up breaking up his marriage. He quit his really great job. He went out on the road. And as a self-published guy, it was hard to sell books 25 years ago. Well, he sold thousands and thousands of them. And when he visited the Book Nook 26 years ago, his book had just been reissued by a major publisher, and he was an incredible guest. It was so cool to talk to him. And I'd forgotten about this interview until I listened to it again. And I said to myself, wow, what a story. And so I looked him up on Google because I wanted to see what he was up to. And that's the only book he's written, as far as I could tell. And he's still out there promoting it 26 years later. It was a bestseller. We'll be talking about astral projection tomorrow morning with Albert Taylor, Soul Traveler, A Guide to Out-of-Body Experiences. Have you ever dreamed that you could fly? We'll be talking about that in the Book Nook, 10:30 Sunday morning, right here on your public radio station.